We present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with an item spotted on the Poynton News and Gossip Facebook page, read by Kathy Clugston.
I've just been out to rescue yet another bin that had blown over on Chestnut Drive in the windy weather. Please help by checking bins for older residents.
Our thanks to Christy Beek for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first, on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Gina Yashere. And opposite them, on my left, Ramesh Ranganathan and Simon Evans. Jeremy, whose post is no longer secure?
It's more Trump, isn't it? Joy. It's the forced resignation of Michael Flynn, National Security Advisor. People keep saying to me, must be good for you lot, you comics, eh, Trump? And you think, do you know what? I mean, I think global takeover of the world by the Russian mafia is a high price to pay for a few fake tan gags, to be honest. I mean, I'd settle for hanging up my boots in a sane world. It's not, we do care about stuff, comedians, and it's not as though Hillary Clinton wouldn't have given us anything to work with. I mean, we'd have had to work harder sifting through the sort of mire of routine neoliberal venality and torturing imperialism to find little nuggets of mirth, but we'd have done. We'd have done our satirical duty. But it's hard for us because this show records on a Thursday, which means that we are like Kellyanne Conway, at least 24 hours behind the events that we're trying to explain. Because for her, she's like, she's like, it's like an improv game where she's got to justify something and guess what it is. She's being interviewed and she's going, the president has full confidence in Mike Pence, Michael Flynn. And she's got so much confidence that he's resigned. It was too much confidence for one man, too much.
Is there some sort of, like, really good, what's a severance package like for president? Because I wonder if Trump, like, if he gets fired, he gets a lot more money than if he quits, because it's like he's trying to get sacked. Like, I think he's just trying to push it as far as he can, do you know what I mean? Like,
You live in America, Gina. Have you been there recently?
I mean, I'm trumped out. It's just tiring. Because it's every day, it's just like, oh, God, what has he done now? And every day, it's a different thing. I just think he's bombarding us with craziness so that when he does decide to pull the trigger, whatever that is, we'll just go, oh, yeah. And that's just him. All right.
Now, Simon, which side are you on?
Well, I find myself slightly torn, Miles, because I have been invited onto this show as the voice of the right wing. I am the
what?
Probably the single most right wing.
No, it's all right, Ramesh. You both are. Don't worry about it.
One of the more right wing members of this panel, but some will go so far as to say Blairite.
Yeah.
I do feel it falls to me to defend Trump. I find our attitude to Trump intriguing in this country. Look at the facts. He denounces the mainstream media. He has risen to power through presenting a series of failed economic measures which are superficially attractive to perfectly reliable and understandable blue-collar grievances. And within a few days of entering office, he is being destabilised by his own intelligence forces. He is essentially a natural ally of the hard left in this country, and I mean, he's only a cardigan and a walking stick away from being Michael Foote, essentially. I think is you've got to remember when you're dealing with Trump seriously, what you're dealing with in America is if you want to try and persuade the people who put him there that they did wrong, that they made an error, you've got to understand they're not interested in the politics. They support him like a football team. If you're a Chelsea fan and Chelsea win a match despite getting three red cards for career-ending fouls on opposition players, nobody goes, well, that's it with me and Chelsea, I've had it, I don't like them. They go, we did it with nine men, we still won. And this is how they see Trump at the moment. Yeah, they just think he's winning despite all these catastrophic errors and failings. He's still winning, and so they're loving it.
That analogy would only work if you'd never supported Chelsea before, but because they suddenly bought an orange lunatic to play for them, you suddenly started supporting them, having no knowledge or interest in football.
People have suddenly started supporting Chelsea because it's drenched with Russian money. I mean, so there is a degree of...
I
And the other little bit of advice I would give is I would say lay off Melania. There's a certain amount of sneering against Melania Trump, which I find distasteful myself. She is obviously a very attractive woman, but she's not some kind of tramp. She speaks five languages, which is five more than Trump, for a start. And although you do have to cut him some slack because he's obviously having to translate in real time from the Russian that's coming in through his earpiece as he speaks.
I think the analogy with Michael Foot is slightly unfair. Given that if one of Michael Foot's neighbours had said, would you mind looking after the cats while we're away, they would have felt entirely that they could trust Michael Foot to look after their cats. Were it Donald Trump, you think the cat is either going to be dead or pregnant when we're going to get them.
Who else visited... Who has visited Trump this week?
Benjamin Netanyahu.
That's right.
And he's slightly wrong-footed... Netanyahu by saying, I don't care what happens in the future. You can have one state, you can have no states, you could have four states. I don't care so long as you're happy.
Well, he said he wanted a solution that worked for both Israel and
America.
Yeah. Paley, these are the latest goings on in that wonky wheeled shopping trolley full of flaming skulls that is the Trump administration. General Michael Flynn resigned on Monday after it was revealed that he'd lied about discussing sanctions with the Russian ambassador. This made it impossible for him to continue as national security advisor, although, in fairness to Flynn, it's possible no one had told him which nation he was supposed to be making more secure. Michael Flynn is a retired three-star general, which the Americans think is something to be applauded, yet in the UK, three stars normally means passable continental breakfast, yet steam room has distinct whiff of urine. Trump said that Flynn had been treated very unfairly, and he's right, it's very unfair to accuse someone of treason based on only the weak and misleading evidence of things that they've literally said and done. Trump also waded into the Israel-Palestine situation, saying that he didn't mind a one-state solution or a two-state solution, whatever would make both sides happy, proving once again that his approach to foreign policy resembles a man who turns up to a game of Risk asking to play as the bowler hat and then repeatedly tries to build a hotel on Yakutsk. 2 points to Jeremy. Gina, who's careering into trouble again?
So, on Monday, Kim Jong-nam, who is the brother of Kim Jong-un, was killed in an airport in Malaysia. Some women apparently approached him and sprayed some sort of liquid in his face, and basically everybody's assuming, I think we can all safely assume, that that was his younger brother that had something to do with it. That's basically what the story
is. I hope you can safely assume that. It's very dangerous.
I would say safe. All right, true.
Certainly wouldn't say it out loud in a public forum.
All right, that's true. All right, for the sake of Kim Jong-il, my name is Whoopi Goldberg.
Because you've got all the different Kims, haven't you? You've got Kim Novak, the one who's bad at housework.
Kim Jong-un was the dad. Kim Jong-un is the current
Yong and the Wrong'un. That's the way you remember. That's how I remember it.
Yong
and the Wrong'un. Yeah, he's the one who's currently in charge.
And which one's Kardashian?
it was his younger brother that he and the uncle he'd had machine gunned by a firing squad. Families, eh?
We're trying to figure out why it's happened now. And they're sort of talking about, I was reading about the sort of stuff he's got up to. And his ultimate low point, apparently, what's really angered the whole family, all of the Kims, is that he tried to sneak into Disneyland, like in Tokyo, which I don't think is a low point. I mean, my mum once found me asleep in the living room naked, just holding a pot noodle. Like, that is... that's a low point. Do you know what I mean? I don't think trying to get into Disneyland is pretty cool. But apparently he's trying to defect to South Korea. Well, the rumour is he's trying to defect to South Korea.
Well, he was already... I mean, he was living in exile for 10 years.
So yeah, but he was supposed to be living in exile, but his Facebook profile, he's got loads of photos of just trying to get into Disneyland, hashtag good times. Do you know what I mean?
I think he's just seeking attention. He's letting off missiles over Japan at the same time as Japanese was meeting Trump... and then killing his brother. I think he's just like that annoying kid who's trying to pick a fight. He's like, look, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? Look what I've done.
I think he does want to sort of pack as much as possible into a sort of 1 week. It's no point, isn't he? Like, he works on a sort of week on, week off.
Yeah.
I do sort of see where he's coming from a little bit, because I think...
Yeah, yeah. We all empathise. Yeah.
I'll tell you why, because his brother was trying to defect to South Korea. I sort of get it. You're North Korean, mate. Don't defect. If my brother started supporting Tottenham, I reckon I'd have him done. Not in an airport, I'd give him some dignity, but maybe maybe in a park or something. But
he would have been, if it hadn't been for the strange sort of Disneyland saga, he was this one, Kim Jong-nam, he would have become the leader after when Kim Jong-il died. So it's quite a sort of fall from...
Imagine that, how much have you got to like Mickey Mouse?
This reminds me of an essay I wrote at school where I thought the Crusades took place immediately after Jesus' death. There was at least 10 years between the point at which he tried to go to Disneyland and was thus disinherited from the hereditary rule of and the recent assassination. He was not assassinated on the way to Disneyland. It is important to put that 10-year gap in there to separate those two events out.
When I first heard the story, the news reporter described the weapon that was used as a poison-laced cloth, but I misheard it, and I thought it was a poisoned lace cloth. And I thought, oh, that's fine, it's a sort of decorative touch of class. In the...
You know, this thing, like, that apparently the woman that did it instigated it. She thought it was a prank or something like that. Like, I don't know what kind of prank it is, but apparently the actual killers were sort of around her, and it was sort of like they'd set her up, and they said, wouldn't it be funny if... You see that guy that's trying to get into Disneyland? Wouldn't it be funny...
It would be possible to get people to assassinate people using that kind of approach, I imagine. The same, you know, as the 11 o'clock show used to trick old ladies in the street into saying bum, didn't they, on the radio. You know, you go, ha, ha, she doesn't realise she's just said bum. And if you could convince people to just hold up a handkerchief under somebody's nose and kill them, that would be a really good way of concealing...
And also, as she puts a handkerchief over it, say bum.
Yeah.
Absolutely amazing. She doesn't realise. She's killed him and she said bum.
Metonymically, these are the latest antics of North Korea, a country whose national motto is you don't have to be mad to rule here, but it helps. In the course of a single bonkers week, they launched a new long-range nuclear missile before being implicated in the assassination of Kim Jong-un's estranged half-brother, news that has been filling the front pages of the fearless investigative North Korean newspapers that simply don't exist. Exiled Kim Jong-nam was attacked at Kuala Lumpur Airport by what news website Asian Correspondent described as lady assassins. Now, in my book, once you've murdered someone in cold blood using a poison more toxic than cyanide, you have ceased to be a lady. Always been my view, can't start making exceptions now. They don't have a programme like the News Quiz in North Korea. The nearest equivalent to this in North Korean media is 6 hours of non-stop synchronised dancing. And I wish I could tell you it's less entertaining than what we have to offer. 2 points to Gina. Ramesh, who's been stoking a controversy?
This is Paul Nuttall, leader of UKIP, who is standing in Stoke in the by-election. And he has had to... Well, he's had to withdraw comments from his website. He said that he had very close friends that died in the Hillsborough tragedy, and then it turned out that he didn't. And then he said, actually, what I meant was somebody I know was at Hillsborough, and then we don't know if that's true. And now what he said is, actually, all I said was I can spell Hillsborough. It's what it turns out he meant. But he's basically got caught out. It turns out he didn't have close friends there. It was on his website. That's where they sourced the information. So now his website is closed down for scheduled maintenance. I don't know how it's scheduled. Just the schedule is every time he gets caught out lying, they have to close down for maintenance. But he sort of told he'd done a lot of lies. He said that he played up front for Tranmere Rovers. That turns out to be a lie. He said that he got a history PhD in 2004. That turns out it's a lie. He said he lives in Stoke. Apparently that's a lie. He said that now that Brexit's happened, there's still a point to UKIP. Turns out that was a lie. Do you mean that's...
He is quite imaginative, isn't he? I mean, he has been trying to make some connections. He says, I have lived in Stoke-on-Sea all my life, and I am 200 years old, and I was on the plane with Buddy Holly. It's like when you go to parents' evening and you find out what your child has been saying. Oh, sorry to hear about your house being destroyed by aliens. We've been hearing all about it. No wonder she's been so late with her homework. We're all very sorry in the staff room.
I mean, the problem they've got is that it's really important that he wins this. I mean, UKIP are saying that they're replacing Labour. And so it really is essential that he does win this, and he's in a bit of trouble. Gareth Snell, who's standing for Labour, has also got into trouble, the Labour candidate, because they've trawled through his Twitter and found that a few years ago he was watching Loose Women and described them as sour-faced women or something like that. You know, the fact that he's watching Loose Women... I think probably makes his position untenable. He also said some horrible things about The Apprentice, about some specky cow or something like that. So now he's in trouble as well. So everyone's sort of trying their best to lose. I don't know if you saw this thing about a Muslim Labour supporter who sent WhatsApp messages and text messages to all of the Muslims in the area saying, if you don't vote for Labour, you are going to go to hell. And I thought, well, I mean, you are already in Stoke.
Hypnotically, this is the glitz and glamour of next week's Stoke-on-Trent central by-election. Just six more sleeps to go. UKIP candidate Paul Nuttall was this week forced to admit that he had not lost close personal friends in the 1989 Hillsborough disaster. However, Nuttall continues to insist he had been present at the match, claiming that if you examine the video footage, you can clearly see him playing in central midfield under his then, then given name of Peter Beardsley. In the interests of fairness, we should point out that we have seen nothing to disprove Nuttall's claims to have been a passenger on the Hindenburg and to have lost close personal friends at the Battle of Bosworth Field. Also, in the Stoke Central campaign, there was embarrassment for Labour candidate Gareth Snell, a name destined, if not for high office, then at least an illustrious career in middle management. Snell has been accused of tweeting sexist comments about The Apprentice and loose women. But this is nothing new for the Labour Party, who could forget Clement Attlee's comments to the 1947 party conference that Gracie Fields was something of a trout and that Joyce Grenfell should stop performing a series of amusing monologues and get back in the kitchen where she belongs. Clearly, Snell's plan is to alienate women first before joining the rest of his party and broadening this out to the remainder of the electorate. 2 points to Romesh. Simon, who's given a synod and a wink to a marriage proposal?
Ah, OK, the general synod, the sort of administrative body that rules the Church of England, they are discussing the minutiae of same-sex marriage now and whether or not it should be celebrated in church, and a report was produced which said that it should not be officiated over and celebrated, and this was approved by the bishops. There was a clean sweep across the board, by a diagonal sweep, but clean nevertheless, by the bishops, and the House of Laity, who I'd not be exclusive to Netflix, I believe, the House of Laity, but they voted it through as well. But the clergy, who actually work at the coalface of the Church of England, the clergy, and who are terrified that the provisional wing of Anglican liberalism will be activated and will bake a really angry cake about this if they're not careful, have said, no, we want to carry on, we want there to be full same-sex marriages in church. I remember when same-sex marriages were legalised a few years ago, a lot of people said that this would undermine conventional heterosexual marriage, and I think that has happened. It certainly seems to have undermined mine, or something has, anyway, I don't know.
I actually tried to find, like, if you look, I was trying to find the source of this, because it's open to some sort of speculation how much homosexuality is sort of, how wrong it is according to the church, because that's pretty much open to interpretation. I wish God would just come down and clear it up. You know, because you sort of think, we are sort of working from a very early version of the Bible, and he hasn't come down and sort of revised it. We're on iPhone 7. Do you know what I mean? I don't know. We're at least sort of due a Bible 4S or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Where God just pops down and says, do you know what, being gay is all right, and also there were dinosaurs, just deal with it. Do you know what I mean? This would clear up a lot of confusion.
Actually, what's interesting about the most conservative people in the synod, it's the laity. It's not the clergy, it's the laity. It's the ones who believe in God who are the problem. Because the clergy have a much more pragmatic approach to this, because they have read the stuff. That's the thing. And if you are a religious scholar and you spend years poring over this, after a minute you think, hang on a minute. That's not true. Come on.
I do feel sorry for, like, you know, in terms of, like, people are not believing as much as they used to. And I just think it's just because Jesus hasn't done anything, like, recently. You know, like, all the miracles from such a long time ago. And I think it's much more difficult to do miracles now because special effects are so good. You know, like, people just tweet, oh, there's actually a platform where there's more fish being passed up underneath the table. I've seen it on Magician's Tricks Uncovered. It's not that impressive.
And unfittingly, this is the decision of the General Synod of the Church of England to reject a House of Bishops report recommending continued opposition to same-sex marriage, all of which casts a continuing doubt on the Archbishop of Canterbury's efforts to hold the Anglican Communion together. The House of Bishops is one of three factions of the Church Synod, and also the name of Truro's most popular gay night. congrats if you're listening, House of Bishops. I'll be there spinning the wheels of steel on Tuesday, as per rudder usual. 8 hours of Scandinavian death metal and Gilbert and Sullivan in exactly equal parts. Anyway, these conversations make me rather uncomfortable, and it makes me glad the only lord I serve is he of the dance. 2 points to Simon. And at the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Gina have 4, and so too do Ramesh and Simon. We start round two with an extract from an interview with actor Stephen McGann in the Sunday Express magazine.
When I was 13, I was very shy. My first kiss was with a girl at a bus stop. My knees were trembling so much, I couldn't get up to the top deck.
Thanks to Anne O'Leary in Silverdale in Staffordshire for sending us that. Jeremy, who's not having such a bad time doing time?
Well, there's a lot of prison stuff going on. Liz Truss has made a big speech saying that she's not going to cut the prison population. I don't mean, you know, like with a Stanley knife. I mean, like, she's basically, a lot of people are saying, look, including Ken Clark and even, you know, Michael Gove when he had his brief period as Justice Secretary, also, like, there's too many people in prison. We're going to have to let some people out to create some space. You know, we're going to have to sort of like leave the doors open subtly and leave maps lying around, just something. But basically, Sodexo were given that prison to run, sacked all the wards, and then that, you know, disaster. Panorama went into undercover. It was very exciting. And so basically, they've got too many people in prison, but Liz Truss says, well, there's nothing we can do about that. They're wrong-uns. And she said they're in for violence and including sexual offences, but only about 40% of prisoners are in for violent offences. Most of them are in for, like, silly things like, you know, robbery and stuff. So clearly what we need to do is make some things less illegal than others. You know, like when they say video piracy is a crime, you think, yeah, not really, though, is it? I mean, nicking from shops isn't that bad, is it? Wait. Not big shops. I mean, I don't mind little... I mean, little corner shops, yeah, that's mean. But, like, if you're going to go and rob Waitrose, I mean, they've got that coming.
Well, but, yeah, but what if you robbed a Lidl? That's worse than like robbing from Waitrose, isn't it?
It's economically illiterate, certainly, to rob Lidl, isn't it?
Yeah, robbing from Lidl, the stuff you're stealing is going to be worth less than the bags you're putting in.
Where should we draw the line, then? Where? What's
Tesco's.
The most serious...
But I have a friend who's a barrister and has genuinely told me that it's historical sexual offences, that it is actually the yew tree backwash. I know it sounds ridiculous.
That is the most disgusting thing I've ever heard.
They're not all minor TV personalities from the 1970s, although that is a significant part of the prison population now, but also as a general culture, this has become a thing to investigate historical sexual offences, and that this has... And he is getting that in his own, you know, briefs, I was going to say, but that will set him off again. But the...
She did make quite a valid point that there are quite a lot of people who are quite horrible. The reason, I mean, they've started to take violent and violent sexual offences much more seriously, as we should, and that's one reason why there are more people in Chokey. But there are lots of people in prison for failing to pay a fine or not
having a TV
licence.
The obvious thing to do
license.
Is surely to take advantage of Brexit and give these people who are currently in jail the work picking fruit and so on that will no longer will have a steady supply of Europeans to do.
Yeah, but then all the old lags in Spain will be coming back.
Oh, that's true.
And we'll have to put them in prison for the time they never did.
It's going to be... 2019 is just going to be a huge domestic rerun of the Italian job, isn't it?
The company, then, that run HMP... Northumberland. They're called Sodexo. Do you know what else they do? They're one of these sort of services companies. What's their main business?
I know they're French.
Their main business is doing school catering.
Is it?
That is what they've crossed over from to run prisons. Yeah, they were involved
in the
horse meat scandal.
Same serving plate, isn't it? When I was a teacher, I used to love a school lunch. So nice. Like, get a little tray bake every day. And it's in little segregated things, and none of the food integrates with each other. It was like apartheid on a plate. It was.
Appositely, this is a searing expose of life in HMP Northumberland, where the BBC's Panorama revealed widespread drug use, a lack of control, door alarms that didn't go off, and a hole in a fence. Justice Secretary Liz Truss says that there is no quick fix. Well, perhaps not for everything, but surely there is for the fence. Panorama's first attempt to send in an undercover reporter backfired when they sent in Jeremy Vine, who beat up the governor and made him his bitch on day one. HMP Northumberland is run by private firm Sodexo, mainly known for school catering, which explains how one prisoner was able to escape by making a dummy of himself made entirely out of potato smileys. Justice Secretary Liz Truss has pledged to inject £100 million into the prison system. She's just waiting to find a big enough condom to wrap it in. 2 points to Jeremy. Gina, who's benefiting from old money?
All right, so that's from this week's news, is that a study was done which showed that pensioners now, their income has now surpassed working people. Not a huge amount, it's like something like 20 quid a week. It's not a massive difference, but they reckon it's because more pensioners own their own homes and a lot of them have got very good pensions. But obviously, you've got to take into consideration that they were able to buy houses when they were still £12. But then some people, like my mum's a pensioner, she could retire, but she works because she doesn't want to be at home in front of the TV. She's bored, and so she carries on doing stuff just to keep herself active, and she's also a greedy bitch, but mostly because she doesn't want to be at home bored.
I read the article, and it actually says, if you read, like, beyond the first paragraph, that these figures are, however, confusing because they include a large number of people who are now technically pensioners, i.e. claiming a state pension, but who are still working. It's exactly the opposite of what they would have you believe, which is that pensioners are having a cushy time. In fact, pensioners, even at the age of 67, don't feel able to retire because the state pension isn't high enough for them to live on at anything like, you know, a reasonable level of standard of living. So they're continuing to work. And this is, according to the people who ran the survey, this is what this is actually telling us. And of course it's presented in the newspapers as exactly the opposite, because newspapers like to create division in society.
Fake media.
And conflict will shift media. Yeah.
That's a couple of friends who are in their 20s and 30s, and they rage about how unfair it is that the older people have, like, homes and food and stuff. But but I think, yeah, but you've got your whole life ahead of you. All these cash-rich pensioners, all they have to look forward to is huge amounts of palliative care, bargain hunt and cruises. I mean, I think bargain hunt is grounds for not resuscitating, to be honest.
I think they should just bring down the average age of death. Like, is it because... because
is yeah, this something you think can be done by policy alone? Or?
Well... I just sort of think, you know, all this value is placed on longevity and extending people's lives, but this is why I've got a pensions crisis. Bring it down. I know Radio 4 listening will take a hit, but I think that... but owning your house, isn't that overrated? Like, you know, because I sort of think, you know, this deal with owning your house so that what? When you die, you can give it to your kids. I don't want my kids... like, what have they done for it? Do you know what I mean? I just sort of think it's overrated. I just rent and then they get nothing... and they have to make their own way in life. And that's the way, especially the second one.
He's not even yours, that one, is he? Yeah.
apparently, Paul Nuttall's a father. That's
what... what other good news was there for people in their 80s this week?
Don't know.
It's a report by Dr. David Lee and Professor Josie Tetley from Manchester about the fact that people in their 80s are having more shared sexual compatibility and emotional closeness than those in their 50s, 60s and 70s. He refers to these people as sexual survivors. nothing wrong with that. Yeah, people in their 80s are having more and better sex than people in their 50s, would you believe? Why is this, Jeremy?
Is this... I don't know. I'm only 55. I just had a bad life.
Jauntily, in yet another week that brings great news for the doily industry, this is a report that pensioners are now on average £20 a week better off than working families. This makes complete sense to me, as all the pensioners I know save money by not doing a big supermarket shop and instead eating their main meal at one of the many funerals they attend each week. Entirely uninvited. The higher income of pensioners is said to be down to their combination of prudent savings, early mortgage repayments, sensible investments, and an intimate knowledge of the Hatton Garden area. In other elderly news this week, it was revealed that 80-somethings are now enjoying a better sex life than their 50-something counterparts. So we now know that when you help an old lady across the road, it's because she's on her way to copulate frantically on a bed of money. Two points to Gina. Ramesh, have a listen to this. Well, that's basically ruined the evening. Ramesh, why will there be less jockeying at the bar?
The Jockey Club has said that people that are attending, you know, like the Cheltenham races or whatever, are getting too drunk and are creating havoc. And so they've decided that they're going to limit people. They're going to put water points in, bottles of water for everybody. They're going to make it less alcohol-focused. You're only allowed to buy 4 drinks at the bar or something like that. They're going to limit you to that because there's just been debaucherous, I believe is the word used, behaviour at the races.
That should work, I reckon, because I normally only get drunk when there isn't water available. That's mainly the, you know, yeah. You're only ever really driven.
Yeah, the number of times I said, I am absolutely parched. Have you got any water? No, tequila then. I've got a number of issues with this. First of all, you know, if you're only allowed to buy 4 drinks, I mean, you sort of think, well, I'd like 8 drinks. How am I going to do that? I'll go back to the bar again. I mean, you're just encouraging people to be hammered, but also have a disguise with them. Do you know what I mean? I don't know how this is solving issues. Also, it's a bit of a weird set of rules. You know, horse racing, I personally think, you know, it seems to be that it's okay to have all these animals running, having a guy whipping them on the backside. If they fall and injure themselves, you shoot them dead. You drug them up before they're doing it. That's all right, as long as you're not tipsy while you're watching that happen. Do you know what I mean? I just think it's a little bit of a mixed sort of set of values. And also, the way that it's been reported, I'm looking at the photos of these people who are debaucherous, and I just think, that looks like a laugh. Do you know what I mean? I'm going to do that instead of Magaluf.
Urinating in a champagne flute. Is that the example?
It takes a degree of accuracy to get it into a champagne flute. I mean,
a champagne flute is surely not big enough either. That's not...
You don't have to put your... You just try and get...
I'm talking about containing the liquid. I'm not making any kind of...
Oh, well, maybe they did one of those towers, you know, like they
do when
they...
Classy,
stack them all up.
rising slowly from it. Yeah.
I mean, there's lots of horses with their langers out urinating merrily, aren't there? I mean, why should it be any different for footballers?
Yes, horses poo in the street. Why shouldn't we, Jeremy? how else, though, is this unpleasant behaviour?
Apparently women were being womanly. You know, like they are with their womanliness.
Some of them were exposing themselves.
Exposing themselves... Like to
physically,
who?
Not like as uneducated or something. Just...
I've got absolutely no idea how the odds work.
What bits were they showing, Miles?
I don't know. I mean, just exposing themselves. It's been left to, I'm afraid, my imagination to run riot. I imagine they just very slowly removed everything to a nice sort of sensuous backing tune, which meant some people found it hard to focus on the races, which was very...
If there's no drink, how else are you going to forget that you're at the races? That's what I don't understand.
Has anyone here ever been to the races?
I went to Wimbledon Dogs once.
Did you expose yourself,
no.
Jeremy?
It was terrifying. I've never seen so many white people in South London. It was absolutely terrifying.
You obviously haven't been to Brixton recently.
There's still one man selling plantains in the market, although his name is Hugo.
Yeah. And also, Hugo selling plantains, ironically. It's not quite the same.
There's a lot of snobbery involved in this, isn't there? Because they wouldn't mind if it was all posh people, would they? Because I'm sure there are lots of hoorays weeing in glasses. And the women wear those bizarre fascinators, which, if you look at them closely, are all modelled on various kinds of human genitalia. So although they're not physically showing themselves, they've kind of got their front bottom on their head. They're all modelled on various...
Various genitalia? How many genitalia are there?
As many as there are people in the world.
Genitals are like snowflakes, Simon.
fingerprints.
They literally melt in your hands.
Certainly, yes.
Neatly, this is the news that the Jockey Club are to introduce new limits on alcohol at next month's Cheltenham Festival to discourage rowdy behaviour. Last year's event was marred by drunkenness and women exposing themselves, and by marred, I mean thankfully enlivened. People will now be limited to 4 pints at a time, and I believe only allowed to expose themselves twice. The Jockey Club have announced the measures months in advance of the event, giving ticket holders plenty of time to dig a Colditz-style lager tunnel. For me, limiting the amount you can drink will just ruin the whole spectacle. If I can't drain a keg of warm Marston's Pedigree, how will I pluck up the courage to ask the man if I can pet one of the horses? I should point out that it's not the jockeys who are doing the drinking. The size of those guys, it doesn't take much to push them over the edge. If you want to see Willie Carson mounting a commercial waste bin in the belief that it's a 2.5-year-old steeplechaser, it'll cost you half a pint. 2 points to Ramesh. Simon, have a listen to this. Well, that's brought the room together.
Is that James Blunt?
Simon, who was exposed by his fares?
This is the French. Whenever a story makes it across from France, it usually conforms to the traditional British narrative about the French, which is that they have affairs. This is our belief. At any rate, we understand, for instance, as Romish was saying, why own your own home? What's the attraction? The French don't like to own their own homes. They famously rent throughout their lives so that they can have affairs and not lose their house in the divorce. But, on this occasion, a French gentleman used Uber, I assume it is in French, Uber. But it is still called Uber. Surprising, given that word's historical resonance for France, but they went with it anyway, and the French have capitulated. And he used an Uber to go to visit his mistress. And because if you've never used Uber, it's an app on your telephone you can use to attract drivers who will drive you to your destination at a lower price than you usually pay for a back cab. And there are a series of buttons on it. You can press one if you want to share a ride, and that will lower the price. You can choose the degree of luxury, a regular car or a luxury car, and so on. There is also a button you can press which says, "Don't tell the missus, all right?" And he pressed this button, but it didn't work. She became aware that he was making journeys which she couldn't account for in any other way. She challenged him. They ended up getting divorced. And he's now suing Uber for €45 million to cover the cost of his divorce, presumably, and possibly a little bit on top for negotiating wiggle room, I don't know. But it's a bit unromantic, isn't it, using Uber? I suppose there is an advantage. Most Uber drivers drive Toyota Prius, which are hybrid cars and thus very quiet on domestic roads. You approach in a low-key sort of manner and you go, "J'arrive."
How can he possibly justify the €45 million? What's that?
Apparently the Uber driver used a particularly circuitous route. And he just said that's not that distance, mate. If you fall asleep in an Uber, they will go like a long way round, and then sometimes they will, like, if you fall asleep, you'll basically wake up at your destination. I mean, I'm explaining how sleep works now. But what I mean is, sorry for getting highbrow, but then you sort of, like, they send you the receipt, then it shows you the route, and sometimes you just think, oh my god, this is a ridiculously long route. And you can rate the driver out of 5 stars, but they also can rate you. Mm. You get rated as a passenger, dude. I am lower than average.
What's your rating?
I'm 4.57, dude. And
I'm
the average.
I'm 4.52. I checked it today.
Well, that doesn't surprise me, But the thing is that if your rating drops, like, really low, because what happens is you activate, you send out the bat signal saying, "I need to go home," and then you see all these cars on your phone, and then they decide whether they want to take you or not. If you've got a low rating, they won't.
I was told by a driver, I didn't even know, that I had a lower rating, and I was like, "What?" And, yeah, he goes, "My rating is 4.9, yours is only 4.7. And he took great pride in
telling
me that.
I would have given him 1 star.
So I gave him 2 stars after that. And now you're the same rate as me.
You're not supposed to use Uber, right? It's like, ethically, you're not supposed to use Uber.
Well, yeah, now people are coming off of Uber because the guy who founded it was on Trump's advisory board, so everybody came off Uber in a protest, which was great because I got a lot more rides despite my lower rating. So it was awesome.
Calligraphically, this is une petite vignette about a Frenchman who is suing the taxi company Uber for €45 million because his wife accessed his travel records and discovered he was having an affair. I feel I should explain some of the terminology for Radio 4 listeners who aren't quite up to speed with it all. France is a large landmass designed to shield us from Germany, but when push comes to shove, very seldom serves its intended purpose. Your heart may be hurting now, but there are plenty more fish in the sea, said Ahmed, who's 4 minutes away. The man's lawyer said his client wanted to remain anonymous, but we have received a clarification that, contrary to earlier reports, he was definitely not a close personal friend of Paul Nuttall. 2 points to Simon. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Gina.
Andrew Blythe saw this in the Birmingham Mail. A Birmingham City Council spokesman confirmed that the closure of the restaurant was due to mouse activity, which was ratified on Monday.
Ramesh.
This is from Peter Walter, who saw this in a magazine called Gruff that reported on a group of walkers who had to be rescued. A spokesman for the rescue team said, "The party was fit and reasonably well equipped, but not adequately prepared for the conditions they encountered on the ridge. One of the party managed to lose both shoes when they were sucked off in a deep bog."
Thank you. And now let's take a look at the final score. Ramesh and Simon have 7, but this week's winners are Jeremy and Gina with 8. Before we leave you, here is the opening to a report on Woman's Hour this week, sent in by lots of people.
Good morning. On the programme today, are you in denial about your hearing loss? Or perhaps someone close to you might be? Keep listening.
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Gina Yashere, Ramesh Ranganathan and Simon Evans. In the chair was Miles Jupp, and the news was read by me, Cathy Clubston. The chair script was written by Sarah Campbell, James Kettle, Ed Amston and Tom Coles, with additional material by Daniel Audrit and Robin Morgan. The producer was Richard Morris, and it was a BBC Studios production. Oh.